What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
The push to get electric vehicles on the road is speeding up, plus some success for one American city during the economic downturn.
The Detroit area economy came out of the pandemic very strong.
And the value of at-home learning spaces. It's Thursday, August 5th. I'm Mark Stewart with the Wall Street Journal. Here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. The U.S. is setting a 50% target for electric vehicle sales by 2030. It's expected to be announced today by the Biden administration. In a joint statement, General Motors, Ford, and Chrysler maker Stellantis said their commitment hinges on federal funding for manufacturing and the building of a network of charging stations, among other things. The automakers have said their commitment was to have electric, fuel cell, and plug-in hybrid vehicles compromise 40 to 50% of sales by 2030. Biden administration officials said the president plans to sign an executive order setting the voluntary goal. The U.S. trade deficit likely widened to a near record in June as the resurgent American economy drove strong demand for foreign-made goods. Economists surveyed by the Wall Street Journal expect a Commerce Department report due out today to show that the deficit in goods and services widened to $74.2 billion in June. That would put the trade gap just shy of the record $75 billion in March. The European Union's top official called on the U.S. to reverse its ban on travelers from the bloc, urging the Biden administration to act within weeks to match Europe's opening to Americans. European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen's comments, published in German media on Wednesday, signal a growing risk that U.S. travelers could again be banned from visiting Europe due to the pandemic, including the spread of the Delta variant. A White House official said Wednesday that the administration is maintaining its travel restrictions because the Delta variant is spreading and COVID-19 cases are rising in the U.S. We'll be getting weekly jobless claims today, as well as earnings from companies including Moderna, Kellogg, and Virgin Galactic. Uber saw a strong rebound in its ridership in the most recent quarter after last year's pandemic lows. It still expects to reach a measure of profitability by the fourth quarter, despite a driver shortage and Delta variant concerns. The price of natural gas has been heating up. We're seeing the highest summer gas prices since 2014. For a look at what's fueling this and what could come next, we're joined by markets reporter Caitlin Ostroff in London. Hi, Caitlin. Good morning.
Hey, Mark.
So, Caitlin, is this a simple case of high demand and low supply?
So, to some degree. So, you've had a massive demand for natural gas, in part because we have very hot temperatures across much of the U.S. People are really turning on their air conditioning. You also have droughts in some western states, which usually use some hydroelectric power, and that's made the amount of water available for that much lower. And so demand for natural gas specifically has been higher. And at the same point, you know, a lot of the producers aren't ramping up how much natural gas they're trying to produce, in part because some of them are looking at this price bump as temporary. And so they're waiting to see whether, you know, this is going to be a long-stated demand that they do have to really start ramping up.
So then looking ahead to the fall and the rest of the year, what are analysts saying?
I mean, a lot of analysts are already starting to revise up how much they think natural gas will cost for the rest of this year, for much of next year. And that's a trend that's going to continue with those estimates going higher, so long as both demand stays high and supply stays consistent. What that will ultimately mean is that people will just have to pay a higher energy bill for that air conditioning.
Caitlin Ostroff, thank you.
Thanks.
Just ahead, Detroit's struggle and success during the pandemic, after the break.
The Claude 3 model family from Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. With models at every point on the price-performance curve, you no longer have to make trade-offs between intelligence, speed, and cost. Claude 3 Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed. And Haiku is the fastest and lowest-cost model on the market, perfectly designed for high-volume, high-speed use cases. Join the thousands of enterprises who trust Anthropic to keep them at the frontier. Visit anthropic.com/Claude today.
As we've discussed over the last few months, economies around the world can see stark differences in this phase of the pandemic, with some struggling and others thriving. Breaking things down even further, there are differences within the United States. Take Detroit, Michigan. For years, the Motor City has struggled with high unemployment and a sluggish economy. But now, the job market there is outshining the rest of the nation for the first time since the SUV boom in the late 1990s. So, what's behind the city and the surrounding area's success? Are there lessons to be learned in Detroit that could help other cities recover from the damage of the pandemic? Let's bring in the Journal's Eric Morath. He covers labor economics and policy. Eric, full disclosure, we both grew up in the Metro Detroit area, so I'm looking forward to this conversation.
Absolutely.
So, Eric, during the peak of the pandemic, the Detroit area's unemployment rate neared 25%, and the rest of the nation was nearly 15%. But now, the region's jobless rate is lower than the national average, and you report that employers there are even having trouble finding workers. What fueled this rather swift turnaround?
Well, two things, really. One very positive. The Detroit area economy came out of the pandemic very strong, and that's different than we typically see. Usually the area is among the last to recover from recessions, and in this case, it's among the first. So that's a very positive sign. And less positive sign is that Detroit has struggled to bring people back into the labor market. We saw a lot of people drop out, and those people are not counted as unemployed. We saw that the area had, you know, more extended school closures, so that was a factor. And we saw even this spring a spike in COVID cases, and that may have kept some people out of seeking jobs and therefore not counted as unemployed.
Having grown up in Michigan, we both know the auto industry is iconic. Right now, cars are in demand. How big of a role is the auto industry playing in this rebound?
Yeah, it's playing a very large role. So Michigan kept some business restrictions in place all the way into this year, but auto factories were allowed to reopen in May 2020 by Governor Gretchen Whitmer. So that got a lot of people back to work and suppliers and so on. Also, we saw government stimulus checks give a lot of people money to put a down payment on a car, and people shifted their spending towards goods when they couldn't travel or dine out. Some people chose to upgrade their vehicles, and that certainly benefits Detroit and had effect across the nation.
Cars and Detroit are synonymous, but in the past, as we have seen, when the car companies have hardship, so does the state. And there's been a move to perhaps diversify things. Is the auto industry the only industry helping the local economy at the moment?
No, there are several other industries that are chipping in. A lot of people don't know, but the Detroit area has a pretty large mortgage finance industry, and that's done well during this kind of pandemic housing boom. And also, there's a pretty good tech sector in Metro Detroit. A lot of it's sort of auto adjacent design and engineering, but there's been a lot of growth in those types of jobs, even by, you know, companies that don't manufacture in Michigan have employees there. And now with looking towards electric vehicles and autonomous cars, there's even more emphasis on that industry.
So obviously some victories. What about struggles ahead?
The overall metro area has below average unemployment, but in the city of Detroit, it's still above 10%. And a lot of workers there struggle. There's not a good transportation infrastructure. There's still a lot of areas that are in need of redevelopment. So it's not a good news story all around, you know, but seeing positive signs this soon after a recession, you know, is certainly a bright spot for Detroit and Michigan.
And finally, Eric, even before the pandemic, we've seen cities across the country try to reinvent themselves. Are there lessons from your reporting on Detroit and even other cities across the country that could guide other communities?
Yeah, I mean, we've really seen that having a diversified economy helps a lot. And then the fact that Detroit's expanded into technology, finance, even some healthcare, you know, that certainly helped it compared to previous recessions. And, you know, on the other side, Detroit is struggling, like we said, to bring people back into the workforce. And that's going to be something that the communities around the country are going to need to confront. How are we going to get the skills and the training when we have low unemployment, we have so many open jobs? You know, how are we going to get the people that are on the sidelines of the labor force back in? And that will be a challenge that Detroit will need to face head on, but most of the country will too.
A lot to think about. Eric Morath, thank you, and I hope to see you when we're both at home.
Sounds great.
And finally, during the pandemic, many families scrambled to find space for their children to attend their remote learning classes and to do schoolwork. As students prepare for a return to in-person learning, parents are keeping the learning areas they built during the pandemic intact. And these designated spaces are also proving to be a selling point. Here's reporter Alina Dizek.
These spaces are in demand from buyers, and listings that mention a learning space sold quicker, roughly 12 days quicker, than homes that didn't mention a learning space, according to data from Realtor.com. Many parents are really concerned with where their children would study and are really looking for these third spaces within the home where a child can do their homework or take a Zoom class if they need.
And we'd also note that Realtor.com and the Wall Street Journal are both owned by parent company News Corp. And that's what's news for Thursday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. If you like us, please rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Mark Stewart for the Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
The Claude 3 model family by Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. Haiku is lightning fast and cost-effective. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed. And Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Learn more at anthropic.com/Claude.